from the slippery studios of WDIY FM in Bethlehem, PA. It is time for another ice-free hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks. You bet your garden. Snow can be a joy, but ice can destroy. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and on today's show, I'll reveal the ice melt products that protect your lawn, garden, pets, and patio instead of destroying them. No, not your pets. We wouldn't destroy your pets. Plus, one man's journey to create correct compost and your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and fiercely frozen felicitations. So stay right where you are, cats and kittens. It's all coming up right after the news.
WDIY has been broadcasting since 1995.
This is Mayor Ken Smith. Congratulations to WDIY for signing on the air.
We're with Commissioner Frank Donches of the Bethlehem Police Department.
We welcome Dr. John on the blend today.
Bob Durow composed, conducted, and played much of the Schoolhouse Rock music.
Three is a magic number.
Weapons and antidote to violence is to speak up against them.
WDIY for 30 years.
From the wild and woolly studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another beneficial hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks. You bet your garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and in this week's In the News, we present a story by Harry Koster that recently appeared on LinkedIn, for which we are using the title, It's a Superhero Team-Up. Clean energy and beneficial insects. And we quote, evidence supports wildflower-based pest management systems in Switzerland. A 2016 study found that perennial wildflower strips reduce cereal leaf beetle damage by 40% in winter wheat fields. In high bush blueberry systems, fields bordered by native wildflowers showed higher populations of beneficial insects, like hoverflies and ladybugs, resulting in increased natural pest predation. In fruit orchards, integrating wildflowers into alleyways reduced fruit damage and eliminated insecticide use over 5 years, as beneficial arthropods stabilized pest populations naturally. Scientific research confirms that wildflowers are not only an ecological asset, but also a practical solution for integrated land management. In agriculture and energy development alike, they present a natural method for reducing pest pressure and minimizing chemical dependence, aligning perfectly with sustainability and biodiversity goals central to modern energy strategies. From an energy developer's perspective, integrating wildflower habitats around solar farms and transmission corridors can create self-sustaining ecosystems that naturally regulate pests and support pollinators. This process, rooted in conservation biological control, enhances biodiversity and strengthens ecosystem resilience through several mechanisms. Wildflowers provide nectar and pollen that sustain hoverflies, lacewings, and parasitic wasps, natural predators of crop pests. Perennial wildflower zones offer essential shelter for beneficial species, protecting them from harsh weather, disturbances, and pesticide exposure. For solar or wind energy projects, these vegetated buffer zones contribute to both biodiversity enhancement and long-term land stability. Strategically placed wildflower strips can divert pest activity away from high-value crops or sensitive energy infrastructure, reducing the need for chemical treatments. End quote. McGrath here. This post came from a person who specializes in geothermal and other alternative forms of clean energy. That's why she references clean energy in several places, including the opening, "From an energy developer's perspective, integrating wildflower habitats around solar farms and transmission corridors can create self-sustaining ecosystems." That's why I chose this post for today. It isn't often that someone fighting the good fight in a specific way, like clean energy, gets out of their comfort zone and does a crossover tag team with a different part of the movement, like native wildflowers, pollinators, and beneficial insects. It would be good to see this happen more often, embracing the entire gestalt instead of just one corner. A final word or 12. The Post didn't make any plant suggestions because they're in Switzerland and most of you are not. Stick with perennials because they're ecologically superior and you don't want to keep planting annuals every year. And lastly, honest, make sure the wildflowers are native to your area and not someplace like Switzerland.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the seriously Christmas city of Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. It won't be long before I edumacate you about the ice melts that can save your garden, your lawn, your pets, your car. But first, another fascinating phone call. Number to call, 610-694-8100, extension number 3, William. Welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here, William. Where is your here?
Tyrone, West Central PA, Northern Blair County, deep in the shadow of Mount Nittany.
Oh, okay. Tyrone, that's an interesting town name. How far across the strait? If you start at Philly and go to Pittsburgh?
A little ways west of center, a good 20-some miles southwest of State College.
Oh, okay. Now we got you pinpointed. What can we do you for?
I love hummingbirds. I'm too lazy to put the bird feeder up. Actually, putting the bird feeder up isn't so hard. Just I'm really bad at cleaning it every time and refilling it. So I heard that scarlet runner beans attract hummingbirds. Went ahead and bought some. I was wondering when the earliest was I could start them. If I start them indoors, I'm standing at my kitchen window and it faces almost due south. Now they're back on standard time. My neighbor's bird feeder, the shadow, points at me at about 12:30. If I were to start them on my kitchen windowsill in the wintertime, or very early spring, do you think I would need a grow light? And I was wondering how big a one do I need, like for half a dozen seeds?
Yes, you would need a grow light. But if you're only going to grow half a dozen seeds, I think it could be a single one tube 24 inches long.
Okay.
I still use fluorescents because I bought a case of them. But if you're starting out fresh, LEDs are the way to go. You know, they're cheaper to run, their light spectrum is better, and they're not going to burn out.
Right, yeah.
I advise against the little kits that have, you know, a light the size of a makeup mirror or something like that. That's not doing anybody any good. But you should be able to fit a good number of seed starting containers under artificial light. and keep them away from the windowsill. The light we get in the winter comes at an angle that does not favor plant life. You know, it's
okay.
It really is a period of rest. And those sunny windowsills, as you just kind of mentioned, we don't get that much sun in the winter. And everyone I've seen gets really cold at night. And scarlet runner beans are practically a tropical plant. For those who don't know, scarlet runner beans are an heirloom variety. They're full-size beans. You know, they need a big, tall trellis to grow on. But that trellis, I mean, turns that whole area into a giant hummingbird feeder. They produce, and here's the key, they produce red tubular flowers. The old advice I was taught to attract hummingbirds, you need three things. The color red, the color red, and the color red. So as soon as you were to put your started plants out in the late spring, where you are, I wouldn't rush it. I'd want to wait, you know, generally, I'd say in a normal summer, but we don't get those no more. I would wait until June 1st, because then there's very little chance the plants are going to get a cold shock, and they'll actually produce for you 2 weeks ahead of time of plants that were put out when the nights were even in the 40s. Now, peas and beans are typically direct sown. You know, you plant the seed right in the ground. If you were in the Carolinas, Georgia, you know, any of those other places where it snows every 3 years and newcomers ask people, what is that? But where you are in a colder part of Pennsylvania than I am, and you don't have the heat sink of the cities nearby, I would definitely start them inside. Now there's a big balancing act here. You know, you want them to grow for at least 6 weeks. But because they are pole beans, climbing beans, they're going to lay down and, you know, try to go to sleep. So what would be interesting, I'm thinking, and this is the only plant you would do this with, maybe, like me, you have a drawer full of plastic forks you've accumulated over the years, and you know you can't throw them out, so you have to figure out something to do with them. I would put, start with a professional seed starting mix that doesn't contain chemicals. There's a lot of natural and organic ones out there. Because the organic world has exploded, the prices have come down, and you're going to be using a good size bag for 3 or 4 years, depending on how many plants you start. And then I'll reveal that when the plants go out, any soil left over goes into a container. So you want to get those like 6-pack plastic cells or 4 packs. And I know they're plastic, but they already exist. So the only thing we can do to make them more environmentally correct is to keep using them till they fall apart.
Right.
So in every, we call them cells, the individual compartments, you want to plant 2 seeds because, you know, germination is never 100%. And interestingly enough, with beans, they don't mind growing close together. I normally don't recommend them, but this might be a great case. Have you seen the little peat pots?
Yes.
Yeah, so you can plant them pot and all. It's really difficult to transplant peas or beans without making them miserable. Mm-hmm. But these peat pots, obviously you just bury it in the ground right up to the soil line, and there's no transplant shock. The only thing you have to be really careful about is when they're inside, because peat wicks its moisture into the surrounding atmosphere. And that surrounding atmosphere in the summertime is generally pretty dry. So you want to put them in like a baking pan and keep water in the pan, and it'll transpire up into the peat pot in the soil. And if you got an extra one, or you just want to get it, a humidifier pointing at the plants will give you a super start. So normally you put two seeds in, two plants come up, you get rid of one. Not in this case. You're going to plant them side by side tightly, and then you want either a tall fence, and I'm talking like an 8-foot high fence, you know, made of hardware cloth or something else that it's easy for the plants to hold on to. Mm-hmm. Although what I did, I had two standalone trellises. They came flat, but if you wanted to do something cool, you would lean the tops against each other and make a pyramid. The nice part mm-hmm. about that is you can probably get by with only planting one side, because once they reach the top, they'll just spill over and come down the other side. And the last thing is, it would be worth your while to purchase a product called inoculant, pea and bean inoculant. This is a little powder that contains a bacteria that allows plants like peas and beans to take plant feeding nitrogen from the air. It also makes them much, much healthier. I would also urge you to do a quick search at Penn State for plants that attract hummingbirds. Anything that's red and has a tubular flower attract them. But scarlet runner beans, the beans themselves are beautiful. It's a great choice.
Okay, great.
I would plant them on April Fool's Day.
Okay, sounds good.
It's easy to remember, great. Right?
Yeah.
All right, well, I wish you luck, and more is more in this case. Get that first run started, but don't be afraid to plant a run direct seeded once we get to like June 1st, and they'll catch up. And, you know, the more you have, the more hummers you're going to get.
Great.
All right. Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you. Love your show.
Thank you.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind all of yous what probably already have a cut Christmas tree in the house, that it needs water in the stand at all times to prevent needle drop. Check that level twice a day, morning and night, and keep it away from heat sources like radiators and hot air vents. But don't go listening to last week's show for the full story, because we'll be right back with a life of compost creation and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the NPR studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA.
For the past three decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8000. 8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of NPR station WDIY in the Christmas city of Bethlehem, PA. Coming up a little later in the game, don't use rock salt. It's bad for your pets, your patio, your car, concrete. It's bad for everything. Instead, there are numerous ice melt products out there that are safer to all those things. And we'll get to them when we get to the question of the week. But right now, it is time for me to welcome my special guest, Scott Russell Smith, author of On Compost, A Year in the Life of a Suburban Garden, and it's from Christmas Lake Press. So we assume that's where Santa goes swimming in the summer. Scott, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you, Mike, and it's a pleasure to be speaking with you, Mr. Mulch, and ahead of speaking with you, I pulled the book of compost off my shelf and was flipping through it just to refresh my memory. And I want to thank you for being the inspiration for my own composting and garden writing journey.
Well, thank you. It's always good to hear that. You never want to be doing something in the wind, so to speak. You hope that it really catches on and inspire somebody. And, you know, I never talk about this, but I've got such a bully pulpit. I mean, even if I only turn a percentage of my listeners, that's that many more bottles of Roundup not purchased and fall leaves left unattended, which would break my heart.
Well, absolutely. There's a lot of people that are looking for good information, sound information, and not too much of it. And what you provide is factual and kind of fun. And I thought with writing my book, I'd get into a little more of a memoir, more of a journey aspect, because you covered the basics so well. And I thought I'd write something about people that are interested in living more sustainably in their yards and in their lives in terms of what to do with the food waste that you gather up in your kitchen and frankly, what to do with all the leaves that fall in your yard. I'm speaking to you today from Connecticut. The garden may be getting put to bed, but the composting season is just beginning.
Oh, yeah. I look at this as the beginning of my garden season because the leaves and other organic matter we work over the next couple of weeks are going to be the garden next year and the year after that. And as I said in my book of compost, and I say public appearances all the time, nature knows we're not smart. So nature produces the world's finest natural fertilizer and drops it, again, because we're not exactly bright, drops it down at our feet. Look at this. This is what I use to build forests. You can have some of it and build a garden that is a true imitation of nature. But instead, they come out with blowers at 7 o'clock on Sunday morning and blow all their leaves onto the neighbor's driveway. Then, of course, the neighbor comes out and blows them back onto their driveway. But eventually, they have to make the ultimate unnecessary move. Then somebody eventually has to bend over and pick them up because all they've done is move them around, whereby I presume you have a shredder attachment for your leaf blower?
I use my mower and shred the leaves there, and I'll tell you, chopped leaves are manna for my pile. And you're spot on. It just drives me crazy, the mow and blow guys that come around. It's no wonder that you know, people pay so much money to get their leaves taken away in the fall, and then they have to spend that much money or more to buy fertilizer the next spring to get their lawn and garden to start blooming. It just seems to me a waste of money and time and eardrums for, you know, the leaf blowers.
Well, I have to admit, our machines make some noise. For instance, I'm all rechargeable, and so is my garden equipment. And they make so much less noise than those two-stroke engines. And maybe if you're a gearhead, but who wants to be mixing oil and gasoline and staining your driveway and your hands don't smell right for a week, you know?
Yeah, I got no interest in that. And it's not just the noise. You know, I live in a very, frankly, polluted part of the country where there's a lot of car traffic, ozone and particulates and stuff. And there's hardly anything more polluting than a two-stroke engine. So I'm glad to be done with that. And my favorite implement in a yard is a rake. I just love the motion. I'm pretty good at it. You know, I've played baseball and this and that, and I just love the motion of a rake and the quietness and kind of to be at peace in my yard. And I don't think it takes me any more time to rake up leaves than it does to have guys chasing a leaf across the yard with a noisy leaf blower.
I actually feel bad for landscapers because they have a certain window to make 90% of their money. And if they were to do it naturally, you know, cut the lawn only when it needs it, you know, return your leaves to you, they probably wouldn't make it because they don't get to sell all these auxiliary things. So that's been one of my big dilemmas, is a lot of people want that convenience. And over the last 30 years, so many have told me it's almost impossible to find somebody who'll do it right. Even when you say, I'll pay you, you know, your, you know, springtime summer fee, but don't come around.
Yeah, well, you know, to me, gardening is, I like the hands-on work. It's a little bit of exercise. And frankly, it's therapy, you know, whether it's weeding or raking, it kind of allows you to touch base with your yard, kind of to save money, to do it yourself. And part of my book was teaching people, maybe it's millennials buying their first house with a bit of a lawn.
Mm-hmm.
Here are things you can do. It's not rocket science. You lay it out well in your book, and there are just some basic things you need to get right, but you can hardly do it wrong as long as you stay organic and, you know, dispense with the chemicals, forget those and all. And just as you well know, there's a mixture of brown leaves and whatnot and some green, more nitrogen-source material. What I've really been focusing on of late is layering my compost pile, just to keep it from getting, you know, too bogged down and to spur the decomposition process. Because I love using my compost by the dry spell of the following summer. It's usually cured and just ready to go. And to me, that's, you know, bags and bags, pounds and pounds of fresh, you know, it's not fertilizer, it's a soil amendment. And it allows
I disagree with you there. It is a soil amendment, but it's all the fertilizer your plant should need if you're doing everything else right.
Yeah, fair enough. And, you know, I add things like I'm blessed to live pretty close to the ocean. So, you know, cold water seaweed adds its own micronutrients.
You and Elliot Coleman, huh? Harvesting that seaweed and that kelp. And as Elliot taught me decades ago, give it a rinse or two and it's not salty anymore.
Yeah, I don't worry too much about salt. I usually go, you know, to the high part of the tide line and I like to collect it after a rainstorm because it usually washes up, you know, during storms. So if the rain can soak it a little bit, I'll just take a, you know, just a bucket, not a whole lot, and stick it in the back of the car and take it home. And I just feel like I've won and really helped my compost pile and in turn my vegetable garden and flower beds.
Yeah, way back in the 1940s when J.I. Rodale was creating the American concept of organic gardening, he stressed that if you have access to water plants of any kind, even cattails, marsh grass, the seaweed and kelp, that they have some sort of extra superpower nutrient that really enhances your compost.
Yeah, I think so. And getting back to what I mentioned about layering, I'll grab a bucket of the salt marsh hay and layer that between, you know, deposits of leaves. And that's exactly what the farmers used to do before the advent of chemical fertilizers and all. They'd go down to the shore and harvest some salt marsh hay to feed their livestock and to layer their gardens with, you know, for mulch. And then, you know, anytime you go to the beach, there's always, you know, pieces of crabs and, you know, a bit of the menhaden. And, you know, I'm old enough to Thanksgiving stories of the Indians taught the pilgrims to plant a fish under their corn to help it grow. Well, you know, they were right about a lot of that stuff.
It turned out bad for the Native Americans.
Well, yeah, that's another story.
Yeah. So you open your book with you trash picking like a 20-pound bag of coffee grounds from behind a coffee shop. And you said you always check to make sure there's no cups, lids, you know, any other contaminants in there. But
plastic.
Yeah, I have to ask, why don't you just go in and ask them to save it for you?
Well, I guess I'm just shy and insecure because, you know, a lot of people don't really know that you can put coffee grounds into a compost pile and, you know, spread a little bit on your vegetable garden. And I'm happy to say in the years since I wrote that, just yesterday I went to my local Starbucks, and now they have a bin of coffee grounds in biodegradable bags that you don't even have to go into the shop anymore. And I picked up 20 pounds to spread over my leaves. So shout out to Starbucks. You know, again, I live in Connecticut. There are no landfills in Connecticut, and our trash goes to the waste incinerators. And food waste is not good to burn, so I'm happy to help the kind of local environment by using compost to dispense with all my food waste and take a load of coffee off the trash hauler's hands.
Starbucks thought about this way before you did. They've long had a program called Grounds for Gardeners. It may have evolved, but the beans come into the stores in 5-pound bags. When the 5-pound bag is empty, they'd fill it back up with spent coffee grounds, put a cute little sticker on it. You know, shredded leaves and coffee grounds, that's all you need. Anything else? You just mentioned crab waste from the seashore and stuff like that. I don't put any kitchen stuff in my compost piles. What I do is I have a worm bin, and all the kitchen waste goes into that. Although I agree that the seafood shells and the fish parts could be used, and they pack a powerful punch, but you got to be careful. People don't seem to understand the threats that raccoons can cause, rats and mice. So all our kitchen waste goes into the worm bins. And then I have worm castings, which are even better than my compost.
Oh, absolutely. And you do raise a good point, you know, that wildlife in our suburban neighborhoods. You have to live with that. And I wonder how people compost outdoors living in bear country. Because
you have no idea how many calls we've gotten about that.
Yeah, yeah. And I, you know, I live in a sort of a metropolitan type suburbs, commuter community for New York City. So the bears aren't here. Boy, do I have a lot of deer in my yard, other mammals, which I love to see. But I mean, you have to, you know, kind of customize your setup for where you live. And that's sort of the fun of composting is, you know, I've got a nice yard. I mulch most of my grass clippings back into the yard. But
now, let me stop you there, because you're mulching your grass clippings with a mulching mower and returning the pulverized grass clippings to your lawn, right? And
yes, sir.
Then in the fall, you run over the combination of leaves and the top parts of your grass to make the absolute perfect mixture of dry browns, the leaves, and green nitrogen, which is the grass clippings. But one thing I always love to do in my writing is explain the things that could go wrong. You can't use clippings from a treated lawn, period. You can, with a mulching mower, return those pulverized clippings to the lawn, but don't use them on anything else. Studies have found that grass-contaminated compost from a treated lawn is a plant killer. And then people decide, oh, compost don't work. It hurts my plants. I can think of no better way to end this interview than with a wonderful paragraph by Walt Whitman, who also understood that baseball and gardening follow the same season and that they get people out of their crowded rooms and relieve stress and break the pressure. So you led off the book pretty much with his story, This Compost.
And I'm looking at it right here.
I'm going to ask you to read it.
Oh, that's wonderful, Mike. Thank you. Now I am terrified at the earth. It is that calm and patient. It grows such sweet things out of such corruptions. It turns harmless and stainless on its axis with such endless successions of diseased corpuses. It distills such exquisite winds out of such infused fetor. It renews with such unwitting looks its prodigal annual sumptuous crops. It gives such divine materials to men and accepts such leavings from them at last.
You know, it's almost like Shakespeare. Whitman said it first and said it best. That's the circle of life. I think we would all be better off if we could at least look at things like that. Try not to go for marketing schemes. Just look. I mean, this planet did really well without us. It's going to do really well after us. I don't know if you've seen the show, The World After People. It used to be on the Discovery Channel, something like that, like 10 years after people.
Yeah,
100 years.
Oh, wonderful.
By the time we get to 100 years, New York City is a botanical explosion. It's, you know, it's like it's just been waiting to get out and breathe free. Before I let you go, let me tell our listeners that this is a true odyssey of your experiences. It ain't one of the skinny books that I write. It's like over 300 pages, and I think it would make excellent winter reading because it is the kind of book you can pick up, read some, put it down, go back. So whether you're an accomplished composter and you want to see what this gentleman does or you've never started, I think you'll be really entertained. All right, Scott, I got to toss you. We've been talking with Scott Russell Smith, author of On Compost, A Year in the Life of a Suburban Garden. It is out now from Christmas Lake Press. So, Scott, good luck with the book, and thanks for being on You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mr. Mulch. Mike, it's been a pleasure to speak with you, and best of luck with your gardening and your show.
Thank you very much, Scott. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and once again suggest that a membership to the station that produces and distributes this show, WDIY-FM, would make an excellent holiday gift for a devoted listener or yourself, not to mention those of us here at the station. And anyone who makes such a gift before Christmas will receive a lucky duck charm directly from me. But you must ask for it. And you should email me directly at youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com so that I know you did it. Quantities are limited, void in Atlantis and Lemuria. But don't go looking up membership details at wdiy.org just yet, because we'll be right back with plant-safe ice melters and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm fabulous Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the studios of NPR station WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. What can you expect to hear next week? Hilarity, bad jokes, a small amount of useful information, and me. As long as these bolt cutters keep working. Boy, you know, this station must buy locks by the dozen. I'm Mike McGrath, and that's probably on the next You Bet Your Garden. Maybe. Plus your fabulous phone calls. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the seriously Christmas city of Bethlehem, PA, via WDIY-FM. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and yes, cats and kittens, we're in the stretch right now. It won't be long before I edumacate you about the ice melts that can save your garden, your lawn, your pets, your car, patio, yada, yada, yada. But first, another fascinating phone call. At 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Dan from Oklahoma, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being had. I'll just lay the groundwork that I often talk about the unrelenting wind in Oklahoma. And are you in OKC?
Norman,
which is just next door.
Right, yeah.
And you challenged me and you said that there are, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I will, and you can correct them, lots of non-windy days.
Yes.
I've been to Oklahoma City 3 times. I didn't catch one of your non-windy days.
Well, that's not too surprising. I mean, it's not like we don't have wind, you know.
So, are you a gardener?
Yes.
Tell us about your garden.
Well, I got raised beds made out of concrete blocks for 2 big ones, and then I've got some on stilts that we bought, and then I've got a couple that I made out of sawing a 55-gallon drum of a food-grade plastic barrel in half, and I drilled holes in it and filled them with soil and used those for little things. I got cabbage in it right now.
You mentioned a raised bed on legs. I have one of those, too, made of cedar, and I love it because it's better than a kitchen garden. It's a front door garden. Go out the front door with a pair of scissors and a big bowl, and you've got your salad right there. But where are your raised beds on legs? Are they near a door?
Mine are right out the back door at about 20 feet to the right there. I mean, 20 feet away from the deck. Dang, take my bowl and my scissors out there and get me a salad.
It's, I mean, one reason to garden is to experience a cut-and-come lettuce year. One of the only other things is to grow your own potatoes and eat one raw, right out of the garden. Just wash it off and bite into it, and the juice will run down your face like a tomato.
You know, I have experienced that, but not since living here. The voles get my potatoes.
Oh, voles are tough, man.
I know.
And one of the best solutions I have seen is a product that once existed, maybe not, maybe does, called Vole Block. And it is sharp stones that you put underground to protect bulbs and roots and things like that. And then if you just make a low fence of not chicken wire, but hardware cloth with small openings that they can't get through, you should be okay, because I don't think voles climb like mice do.
Well, oddly enough, I have to grow my tomatoes in hardware cloth cages in the ground.
Well,
and peppers, they love the peppers more than anything.
You have a real vole problem.
I know.
My memory banks have accessed my other solution, which is to put up a raptor perch in the middle of your garden.
Right.
Right.
Well, we have something like that. It's the high wire that's not really high, and they sit on that a lot.
Raptors, so, like owls.
Yeah, we see them. We see, but mostly we see these little hawks.
Right, because the owls come out at night. I would suggest you experiment by adding a raptor perch. You know, a long piece of wood in the ground and a slightly smaller one crossed over at the top of it.
What about how tall you?
If you want to make it easy on yourself, 6 feet, I think you might get better numbers at 8 feet.
Well, they come in 8 feet lengths too, anyway, most boards. So
there you go. You're already started. Owls are the number one predator of voles. Now, I proved this at my church. They were having vole problems. And I said, where do you keep the crucifixes for Easter? And they said, they're in the basement. Why? I said, give me one, and we're going to put it right here. Yeah, but what about the voles? I said, we're taking care of the voles. After 3 to 6 months, the ground was littered with owl pellets, and the voles were gone. I mean,
so those voles mostly come out at night?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, that's why I rarely see them, but yeah. I find their tunnels.
The holes they make in the grass, you mean, the lines?
Well, I mean, in my beds, they make tunnels under the ground.
You got good soil.
Well, it's all, I mean, they're, like you've often recommended, a raised bed doesn't get compacted, and it was all good dirt to begin with.
Yeah. I would put the sharp stones in the bottom of your tomato cages. You don't have to buy them. I mean, You know how to make sharp, small objects, right?
Well, I mean, I could bust up a rock, I suppose.
Or, God help me, a soda bottle. Do they still make soda bottles? Wait a minute.
Glass bottles. Right, right. I'd kind of be afraid to put glass down in there, but in case I ever need to dig down in there.
Well, I've also heard that just a whole bunch of rocks, like making a moat of rocks, is helpful.
Yeah, I could see that.
And obviously, don't get rid of the hardware cloth above ground.
I got it below ground. See, I make hardwood cloth. I've got them already made. They're cages that are about, a little over a foot across and about a foot deep with a bottom in them that I set and made on my deck over a laborious period of time. And every one of my tomatoes, I put that down in the ground and put fresh soil in it every year and grow them like that.
All right. Well, I think this turned out to be a very good phone call. I was prepared to talk about wind protection and all that stuff, But we be out of time, and I have to say it's been wonderful speaking with you. All right, you take care, man.
All right, Mike, thanks.
As promised, it is now time for the question of the week, which we are calling, are you ready to melt your ice and handle your snow? Baby, it's cold outside. Many of us are waking up to see frost on our windshields. And we also see the odd houseplant left outside that we don't have to worry about overwatering anymore. That means it is time to purchase a lawn and landscape-friendly de-icer before the stores run out of the good stuff. So if you haven't yet slid acrobatically across the patio like an Olympic ice skater who didn't spot the landing, get thee to a hardware store or local home store right away. Buy what you think you'll need for a while and be prepared, especially if you have already had fun exploring the physics of the non-friction surface that used to be your front steps. Visit or call those local shops to see if A, they still have some of the stuff we'll list in a minute, or B, if they're out of stock, ask when the next truck comes in, be there and seize the moment. The long-range forecast for many of us indicates a potentially cold and miserable winter, so don't delay or underbuy. Here's what you don't want: rock salt, whose chemical initials are NaCl. It's cheap, but it damages lawns, patios, cars, and structures. Alternatives are somewhat more expensive, but they don't nuke your landscape or rust your car. And they work better, faster, and at lower temperatures than rock salt. And you can apply much less of the alternatives, so you probably amortize things, or better, over the winter, in addition to you not destroying your plantings, patio, or inviting rust to invade your undercarriage. Make sure the letters NaCl do not appear on the label. Here's what you do want. My top choice is calcium chloride, chemical initials CaCl. And my preferred packaging is one of those hard plastic shaker jugs. They keep the material nice and fresh. And when emptied and rinsed well, they make great containers for potting soil and such. CaCl also comes in reusable buckets. No matter the container, seal the lid tightly in between uses and keep it away from moisture. I am wary of bagged de-icers. Once they are opened, the material in plastic bags can quickly solidify and become hard to work with, or even worse, generating enough heat to be problematic. And plastic bags are a serious danger to marine life, especially sea turtles, who mistake them for tasty jellyfish. It looks like the first patches of ice are going to show up super early this season, perhaps as soon as last week. You need to be prepared to protect yourself from falls without killing your lawn by buying some alternative de-icer this weekend if you haven't loaded up already. And if you have the stuff in stock, good on you. You can collect $200 and stay out of jail. Again, my main choice is calcium chloride, CaCl. A very small amount melts ice fast, even at low temperatures. Potassium chloride, which is also known as potash. Yes, that's just like our potash, but it's not for use in the garden because of the chloride salts. Its chemical designation is KCl. It's obtained from ancient dried lake deposits that were once primordial oceans, and is harvested from lakes in China to be reworked in Japan. Magnesium chloride, MgCl, is obtained naturally from the Great Salt Lake in North America and the Dead Sea in Jordan. In Japan, it is sold as nagari, derived from the Japanese word for bitter, a white powder produced from seawater after the sodium chloride has been removed and the water evaporated. In China, the material originates from lakes in the Chinese province of Qinghai to then be worked in Japan. It is also safe and very effective. You may find some or all of these products mixed together in ice melting blends. At the risk of repetition, what you want to avoid is sodium chloride, aka rock salt, aka NaCl on the label. Yes, it's cheap, but a new lawn and landscape are not, so stay away from the rock. And be careful. Some products that look like alternatives are 90% rock salt wearing a red dress and high heels. If the package lists NaCl as an ingredient, take a pass and keep on looking. And remember, a little dabble, do you? In my part of Pennsylvania, nighttime temps in the 20s are predicted for next week with rain, snow, sleet, and a plague of locusts on Tuesday. Be prepared to prevent slips and falls by having a good de-icer on hand. To protect your lawn and other plantings, make it calcium chloride or one of the other plant safe de-icers. All together now, everybody out there, anything but rock salt. And use it wisely. It takes only a small amount of these alternative de-icers to prevent ice from forming, so be stingy when you spread it. And be aware that the most effective method is to spread the material right before a potentially icy weather event begins. It is much easier to prevent ice from forming than it is to try and melt it away in a hurry the next morning when you're trying to get to work without breaking your neck. And if you miss that window, be sure to remove all of the snow before you use the de-icer. Well, those sure were some great ice melt suggestions, now, wasn't they? Luckily, you can take notes as you read the details over at your leisure or your leisure by following the link for the Gardens Alive Question of the Week at the top of the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Yikes, my producer is threatening to drench my deck if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 610-694-8100. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse, teeming towards our garden shore at youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com. Oh, and please look up your location on Google Maps and then tell us where it says you live. And visit our Facebook page where we post new photos of our gardens and invite you to send us photos of your precious plants and share your thoughts about the show. We also provide important and informative updates about the show, a link to the written version of the Gardens Alive Question of the Week, and links to our priceless podcast. It's all at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. You Bet Your Garden is a public radio show and podcast produced and delivered to you every week from the studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when a little fishy crawled out of the Schuylkill River and wiggled its way over to John Bartram's garden. Our musical director is Ken Queter. Our social media director is Amanda Norfleet. Our peerless prince of profound production is James Ziprote. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY-FM. Our executive producer is the always lovely Jonas Bowen. And our incredible assistant is the awesome Ninja Sean. Special thanks to our special guest, Scott Smith, author of On Compost, for being with us today. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I'm keeping an eye on my indoor pepper plants because the dry air of winter has them absorbing water like a bantha on the desert planet of Tatooine. But I'll take a break long enough to see you again next week.